it was determined that light that was traveling huge distances, like 500 million light years of distance, they lose energy depending on how much energy, you know, the light wave has. And that nature of the energy loss is actually consistent with the idea that space would be quantized. You can think of it as, you know, photons traveling 500 million light years through space, but bouncing off the infrastructure of space, or bouncing off the sort of the, you know, the construct of space. Over that much time and that much distance, they noticed a four-minute anomaly, which means that the, you know, one's photons of a certain energy differed from photons of a different energy by a matter of 4 minutes. And that's a very small amount over such a great distance, but it correlated with the idea that space might be quantized. And, you know, these are the kind of things that interest me, because the book that I wrote is about, you know, whether or not we live in a programmed reality. Mm-hmm. You know, could our reality be quantized in some way? And things like this kind of lend some support to the idea. They don't prove it, but they do provide some evidence.
And tell me about that phrase, programmed reality. What is that?
Well, what that really means is, and that's not my phrase, Philip K. Dick, actually, a science fiction writer, I was the first one that I knew who ever used that, and he stated in 1977 that he felt we were living in a computer-programmed reality. So, you know, the ideas have been out there for a while, but basically the idea is that everything that we interact with, everything that we see, could be generated by some sort of computational mechanism. And it's, you know, it's kind of like the movie The Matrix is probably the easiest thing to understand the idea. But there are other ways that you could generate a programmed reality. You could actually generate a physical reality through program means via nanotech or technologies that are beyond that. And, you know, it's a little bit hard of a concept to accept at first. And, you know, I'm the first to admit that I'm not fully there either. My book really just presents all the evidence and really kind of, you know, leads to the conclusion that it's definitely possible and actually very probable. But when you think about the directions that we're going now in terms of video games, virtual reality, simulations, you know, brain-computer interfaces, mm-hmm. all these kind of things are possible within 20, 30 years. And in fact, you know, given the way we're going right now, probably sooner rather than later, that we'll be able to create a completely different reality, indistinguishable from what we think of as real reality. So, you know, then the question is, if we're going to be creating millions of those in 20, 30 years' time, how do we know we're not already living in one? And that's kind of what some of these ideas explore.
And there could be many of them, too.
There could be, absolutely.
You wrote in an article that the past can be changed. What did you mean by that?
Well, that's really kind of a fascinating idea, too, and some people have been doing some research on this. One of the specific examples, which just fascinates me a lot, is something called the quantum eraser experiment. I don't know if you've heard of that, but you're probably familiar with the double slit experiment in quantum mechanics, where you fire electrons basically a barrier that has two slits in it, and on the other side of that barrier is a screen that records the electrons coming through the slits. Well, it turns out that it makes an interference pattern, which people, you know, were baffled at when they first noticed that electrons, these things that they used to think of as like billiard ball type devices, actually formed an interference pattern. Well, they've taken this experiment to, you know, much greater depths, and have now done things where if you can observe which slit the electron goes through, the interference pattern disappears. So in other words, all you have to do is put some sort of device in there that can determine what slit it goes through, and it changes the outcome of the experiment. And that's what's called the observer effect, and that's A lot of people have written about that idea where, you know, our observation of experiments is a key part of the results of those experiments. So that's, you know, that's all been done quite a bit. And physicists have kind of had to come to terms with the idea that people's observational attributes in terms of an experiment really play a role in the results of the experiment. But one of the things that's been done recently is where they put some delays in some of the paths of these particles, and they can then actually erase the information that that determined which slit it went through, so that effectively they are removing the interference pattern even after the photons hit the detector. So in other words, it's something they're influencing the past by an action that's being taken in the present.
Will that make time travel possible?
It could. I mean, that gives you, you know, an example that if you can influence the past, you know, time travel is a little bit different of a way to get into that. But, you know, these ideas, this is just a, you know, one specific example of influencing the past. Paul Davies had suggested that conscious observers can actually reach back in history to exert influence on early events in the universe, and that was his way of explaining how the universe fine-tunes itself. You know, there was a study back in the 80s by Helmut Schmidt that showed that people can influence past random number sequences. So they would experiment with these individuals who would try to guess random numbers, and the results would actually, you know, they showed a kind of retrocausality. They showed that the results changed in the past. Time travel to the past, scientifically, it's possible. I know you've had some physicists and astronomers on the show, Kip Thorne and other people, who have talked about how it's possible via these really exotic devices that have exotic matter or cosmic strings or something like that. But time travel into the past via programmed reality is a lot easier. I mean, it actually is very simple if you think about it. If you think about how a program works, let's say a gaming program or something that records a record of everything that happens in the game, well, that record is the past. What's our past? Our past is really just the artifacts that make up the past, like newspaper reports or, you know, television reports or something like that, and memories. So artifacts and memories.
And memories, yep.
The artifacts can be replaced. And if we're under a programmed reality, the program theoretically could very easily replace all artifacts related to some event, for example. And what about memories? Can memories be erased? Well, we're now erasing memories. We're selectively erasing memories in mice. So we've proven that we can actually do that. So, you know, to some sense, you know, one way of looking at it is that a programmed reality model of the universe allows you to travel back in time without having to worry about any of that grandfather paradox stuff, because you don't necessarily have to interact with things. You could theoretically travel back in time with your consciousness and observe what happened in the past.